Welcome, Daryl Anger, to the River of Suck podcast.
Wow, Andy. Well, thanks for having me. This is great. And a lovely river it is. Yes.
Oh, yes. We're all kind of swimming in it together. I don't. You know one thing, if we're all swimming in the River of Suck, it must be pretty big.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it stretches, you know, to accommodate whoever's, you know, taking a dip that particular day. And but, you know, that's the thing, I guess, with the fiddle, right? I mean, that's probably part of your aesthetic and just the original, I would think, you know. I'm just making a guess here because I don't really know, you know. I mean, who really ultimately can know another person fully, you know, really? I mean, when it gets back down to it, but I would surmise that possibly, you know, that just the act of playing the violin is sort of, you know, you're right up there, it's right up in your face, you hear all the problems. I think that even, you know, somebody like, you know, even Itzhak Perlman will tell you there are days that, I just suck on violin, you know, and we all have those. And sometimes those days go on for days, weeks.
Yeah, they become weeks,
yeah,
months, years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your life right there.
I'm up on 5 decades now, going on 6. And it's, you know, it's like, stepping into the Humilitron every day.
Nice. Yeah. Did you ever meet or know John McGann? And part of the reason I ask that is because I stole this idea of the River of Suck from a lesson he taught me at Berklee.
Wow, yeah. Well, John McGann, you know, a truly legendary character who I was privileged to meet and play with more than 5 times, maybe 8 or 11 times, just during the course of my visits to Boston and various places. And he was always, just kind of jaw-droppingly great and very, very funny. And certainly his trenchant analysis of the various suck factors, surrounding, both, you know, his play, you know, he was such a great analyst and a great tone guy. And he just there was very little about him that I wouldn't say that was great, you know. And a great-hearted human being who could be very funny, you know. And, if anybody had an inflated idea of what they were doing, you know, he had the pin at the ready, you know, in a very artistic way. So, lovely person and really, you know, super creative.
Yeah.
I think he inspired a lot of people. I know my colleague Joe K. Walsh really got close to him. And of course, my old friend Matt Glazer, one of my oldest friends now, we are both old, but we have been friends for a long time.
The band The Wayfaring Strangers.
Yeah.
They were in that.
Featuring John McGann, yeah.
That was a great band.
Yeah, it was Matt's band, and John was like the guy that held it together very much. So you can hear John. He's got his solo records and everything. Yeah, I love that guy. So that's where that River Suck idea came from.
Yeah, he wanted me to practice. And he was like, you have to drag those techniques through the River of Suck.
The River of Suck is, flowing steadily, for sure. it's, there's always something. Something comes up, some problem that needs to be addressed. Right now, I've just completed, we just recorded and are about to put out a recording with my band, Mr. Sun, which includes Joe K. Walsh on mandolin and Grant Gordy on guitar, Aidan O'Donnell on bass, and moi. And that's pretty good, great band. And we just took a year to figure out how to play Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn's version of the Nutcracker Suite, which came out in 1960 and was a legendary thing for the Duke Ellington band. and made quite a stir. And just, you know, in the, you just need to translate that stuff into string band language, I think. All that stuff needs to be, you know, absorbed by the string band idea. And we took that one on, and I think we did a pretty decent job. It's not embarrassing. And it turns out to be like sort of a Christmas record, I guess, because of the Nutcracker, Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker suite, of course, which always, you know, just comes around like clockwork every December. There it is. Okay.
So what about that part sucks? I mean, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's just funny that, you know, it just would be assigned to that 1 month. When you listen to the Ellington version, it really sort of floats free of any, holiday association, you know, because those guys just swang it. Mm. They swung it and swang it. And just an amazing rethinking of the Nutcracker. And we went ahead and you know, used a lot of those ideas and actually did some very exact transcriptions of some of the solos and some of the arrangements. We found some original score material where we were able to transfer the horn parts to string parts. But we also kind of took the spirit of Billy Strayhorn's arrangements, you know, the way he would just, okay, well, you know, here it is. I'm just going to rewrite this stuff to make it work for me. And we kind of did the same for ourselves. You know, we just said, okay, Billy, we're so inspired that we're just going to just completely, you know, take this stuff to our own level. So there's a nice mix of that, you know, just sort of our original whacked out conception.
You're saying, oh, we're super inspired by this.
Yeah.
You know, someone else might be intimidated by it or what, and maybe being intimidated by it is part of what makes makes it a big project in certain ways. But I wonder if you could talk about being inspired by other people versus a lot of people's first response is to feel bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know, Andy. We were kind of, it sounded, you know, like we were veering off into promo land and not really talking about the issues that really, the grinding issues that like are in our face every day. But I was just about to come out to that. Coming around to that. You know me. I'm you know, the digressor.
Digressosaurus Rex.
Digressus. That's great. I got to use that. But everything comes around to, you know, the subject at hand eventually, because, you know, as we know from music, everything is connected to everything else. So, yeah, you know, the thing about that was inspiring about the Ellington band and the whole Ellington aesthetic is that all those guys in that band were absolute maniacal, fully individuated nutballs, you know, and they were great musicians. But, you know, it wasn't like there was like some kind of contest, you know. I mean, he didn't have anybody like John Coltrane or you know, even Charlie Parker. He just had these guys that were themselves. They were totally themselves. You could recognize them like 2 seconds or maybe even 1 second for a couple of them, you know. Certainly, Johnny Hodges, Paul Gonzalez, and, you know, those kind of guys, the drummers, you know, for those who listen to drums. Those guys, they were all just so themselves, and that's an inspiring thing, especially for me and, you know, the Grant, you know, the Mr. Sun guys, because and part of the aesthetic of our band is that we just let ourselves be ourselves, and you know, we've kind of dropped out of the you know, per notes per second race and all that stuff. We're just trying to be more us and, you know, talk to each other with our instruments and kind of just interact in a way that is, you know, that works, you know, for everybody, you know. We're just going to get in here and we're going to just make some sounds that make everybody feel good or laugh or run out of the room or, like, you know, flop around on the floor like a fish, whatever.
Yeah.
It's so that... In that way, you know, the Ellington band was inspiring to us because we felt sort of like kindred spirits in the sense that, you know, they're just themselves and they're just going to be themselves. Yeah. So that was very cool, you know. And of course, Ellington was famous for writing for the individual guys in his band. So that, you know, yeah, I think that, you know, that was the point of that thing. So you know, you're really, you know, you're always looking for technique, right? You're always looking for technique so that you can express stuff. You know, in order to express stuff on a musical instrument such as violin, you have to kind of know how to play it, you know. And that's just that's the rub, right? You know, you can be yourself, but if you're just making random noises, is that really, you know, that might be part of your aesthetic, but you could just do that a lot more cheaply by not buying a violin and just making mouth sounds, you know. Like,
yeah.
That kind of stuff. So, or just using your words, English. You know, I really enjoy talking to you, Andy, because you're always looking for ways to express you know, ideas in words that might not be the words that are just, you know, they're in the queue, right? You know, we all have words that are sort of in the queue, sure. And it's just, and people use, you know, expressions, modes of expressions they might use. They turn one word into, or many words into one word, you know, like, hey, how you doing? Something like that, which is actually one word, even though it's four words. And of course, you know, but you're always looking for ways to just get around that problem of just using cliches and just find another way to say stuff. And I really love that. You know, I've always kind of been into that. And now that I'm older and my parts of my mind, you know, check out on a regular basis, it's almost a necessity to find, you know, I just can't think of that word I wanted to say. But I'm just going to have to work around it and find some other way to say this, because I just
can't. New words.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even consciously avoiding words at this point. They've left the building.
Well, it's funny you bring up the idea of cliches, because at this point I'm like, okay, well, I've got my different river of suck topics, and one of them that you just heavily alluded to, which I start with, but I didn't even have to ask you for it, is the youest you. This Victor Wooten quote of like, be the youest you can be.
Nice.
Well, you just said it in some new words with regards to the album. So I'm digging the words, man. I cannot go through an episode without sort of giving the visual of the River of Suck. So before we go any further, I must pontificate on the River of Suck for a moment.
Okay, so what's our point here? What are we trying to get across to our listening audience?
Oh, just how special but intimidating but possible but massive the kind of chasm is between, or how it feels, it seems, between where we are and where we want to be.
Ah, yeah, well put, yeah. Yeah, between fully realized self-expression and just wishing it was going to be some way that
just
probably not going to be.
I wish this was just better. Yeah. That's not, okay, yeah. So the River of Suck is a raging whitewater
torrent
river.
Torrent.
But you're not in it yet. You're standing right now. We're kind of observing it. We're on one side.
Okay.
We're on our comfort shore.
Okay.
We're behind us is our comfort cave.
Mm,
nice. And it's where we do all the things that are easy. We already know how to do them. Comfort zone. Muscle memory, you know?
Yeah.
Don't have to think about it. On the other side of the River of Suck, we can see those tiny little future versions of ourselves. They're tiny because they seem so far away. They are us, but they can do the things they wish we could do now. It's future us. And the problem is in between. I mean, I guess there's a little time travel involved here.
Yeah.
Between us now today and future you doing the things you wish you could do now, there's a raging whitewater river of suck filled with rapids and rocks, and
gators.
Gators.
Yeah.
Thought piranhas. Thought piranhas are big.
Love that.
Yeah. Big enemy. Those self-destructive thoughts that come in. I'm not good enough. Should I? You talked about the note race. Should I be playing more notes? Will they think I'm less of a player if I'm not playing enough notes? Well, it's. They said it was a bluegrass festival, you know. But the idea, and this is really, I think, the heart of the John McGann theory is that you have to suck at something before you can be good at it. You have to be actually doing the thing poorly and accept it along the path to getting to where you want to go.
That is so true. And may I just interject?
Please.
From my particular perspective, which is on the other side of 7 decades now, that this time travel does not go just one direction.
Oh.
Doesn't go just to the future. When I listen to recordings of myself from the late 80s, early 90s, I hear a very virtuosic player who... is capable of doing a lot of things that this guy sitting here right now would have to... I'm not even sure if I can really get back to some of that stuff, but there are other things that I'm choosing to do that may work equally well if they're entirely different, you know? Mm. So that's another interesting perspective on this. You know, you lose some physical abilities along the way, that may have an effect on the kind of thing. Sometimes I think about myself as a pitcher, and this is a pretty universal thing. You know, you talk to a lot of older players who, it's like if I was a pitcher, you know, I don't have a fastball anymore, really. You know, I can't really triple time anymore. I can kind of occasionally double time if it's really slow, but so my fastball's kaput. But you know, man, my spitball and my slider and my curveball are pretty darn good still, and getting better actually. So those kind of tricky, you know, little backwater, you know, little whirlpools by the side of the river, I feel better at exploring those and taking a little time, by the side of that sucky old river.
Would it be safe to say that in some way you're alluding to just accepting that change is constant, that change is
inescapable?
Yes. Inevitable.
Yeah.
And it's coming for you.
That is true. You know, we all have an arc, and sometimes the arc, you know, will come back up in some ways, but you have to, you know, you choose your area, you know, depending on what you can do. And of course, that is, you know, it doesn't just apply to age. It can apply to all kinds of things. You know, you might have small hands, or you might have giant hands that don't fit on the neck. Or you might have, your neurons might not fire as fast as some people's. You know?
Do you feel like your arc has gone the way that you expected?
To some extent, yeah. You know, actually, it's a little bit longer arc than I actually thought. I do come from a wiry little bunch of little people who tend to hang on for a long time. So, you know, still pretty minimal arthritis, things like that, although I do get bothered, but nothing that's going to stop me from playing. I think, you know, as far as just, just having the old car breaking down, I think I've been pretty lucky so far. I hope to continue to be lucky for at least 6 or 7 more years. I think I got in me, you know, of like just, you know, acceptable, you know, stuff. Yeah, playing at a level where, you know, like a normal person would enjoy. Yeah. You know, that's an interesting thing too. You know, what's your level of acceptability that you're gonna, you know, go with? You know that.
Yeah.
You want to be floating as far above that, you know, your baseline, as possible. But sometimes you're like, you have to skim dangerously close. You know, you're like flying right above the water, and just yeah, depending on, you know, what's going on. If you're tired, if you've been sick, if you, you know, just been on a plane forever, if you're, you know, if you're worried about, you know, your family or, you know, all kinds of things, you know. Yeah, what, you know, did I pay my car insurance? You know, what's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. I want to give this chainsaw guy a moment to do a chainsaw.
Ah. Chainsaw duet.
Is that a duet? All right. Well, you seem to have picked up a fiddle inspired by the chainsaws. I mean, what's the difference between a fiddle and a chainsaw? One's a saw and the other you saw.
They both, there's a lot of sawing going on. There's both hands. One of them, you really have to go back and forth. Everyone just, you know, pull the switch, hope for the best, and hope you don't cut your leg off. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, how about that? You know, so we're looking at, you know, kind of the crossing the line between stuff that you can't do and want to do and stuff that you can do and moving toward the stuff that you think you can do. And I am still working on all kinds of things. I think one of the things that I'm working the most on is, you know, the whole Scandinavian music thing, where it's with time, right? With subdivision mm-hmm. of time, where, it, for instance, in a polska, not to be confused with polka, a polska is an entirely different thing, designed to be played by very large animals whose surface area is small in proportion to their mass. And in that way, you know, you have that kind of lumbering quality of a polska, which is in three beats to a measure, but the beats are really big.
Yeah.
Right? So they stay warm because their surface area is small in proportion to the mass. So instead of, like, for instance, you have a waltz. With a polska, it's like, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and pass the gosh darn butter, pass the gosh darn butter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beat so the dancers can get back where they started.
Oh, yeah.
From that's beautiful and confusing. So yeah, we have those, but you know, you go beyond that to the really cranky ones, right? It's where you're putting triplets inside of other triplets, and there's wheels within wheels. Yeah, so it's like yeah, so you get something like that. Oops, I forgot which string I was playing on. What is that? Right? I mean, it's just I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, like, music of the Caribbean and South America has some very sophisticated rhythms going on, but this is beyond, you know, like, what is going on there, you know? And so that is a, you know, being a kind of a rhythm guy myself, it immediately attracts me and go, like, I must, you know, delve into this and see if I can actually, you know, understand in a way that makes sense. And it's not just understanding mathematically, right? We want to understand with our viscera. We want to understand with our muscles, hearts. Sometimes we have to start up in the forebrain and then work it down into the lower brain stem. And then finally, it's spread out along the entire nervous system and it all works. And we're dancing and the audience is dancing. They don't even know what they're dancing to.
And you have a record where you and Mike Marshall play with Vesson. Did you go through a river of suck when you were first starting to learn about these polska rhythms and stuff?
Oh, yeah. And I am wading ever deeper, you know, because, you know, you can start with that stuff. And it's like, it's very, you know, very, the stuff is so direct. I mean, there's a whole world of that stuff that's just, it's like boiling cabbage down. It's very direct and totally beautiful and doesn't really take that much. We just played a little bit of a Klunda Polska number 3, which is pretty straightforward, except for that extra beat right there. But yeah, so you can kind of start with stuff, you know, luckily, you know, you can start with stuff that you can do and then just kind of keep wading further out into the depths.
I guess that's one of the things that really makes music so fun. I mean, it feels like it would take multiple lifetimes to learn enough about music to actually say, oh, I know what I'm doing.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm convinced of that, you know.
But to a lot of people, you appear as if you know what you're doing.
Well, that's kind of the gig. I mean, if you get on stage, you know, I mean, people come up to you, you know,
that's right.
And say, you're amazing, man. Well, yeah, that's the gig. I mean, that's what, you know, that's, you do that part of your gig that you can do that's amazing, and that's what you present. And you work on widening that area, right? You want to get farther down in the river of amazingness.
Yeah.
You know, instead, or, you know, whatever that is, you know, because they're, you know, there's always going to be a suck current, you know.
Sure.
In the deepest part of that river. But, yeah, you know, we want to build up a, you know, in our explorations, you know, we have that reserve, right? You know, talking about the what's your baseline, right?
Yeah.
You know, you want to have a reserve of amazingness that you can, you know, present in public that's presentable, you know, like, yeah, well, I have a clean shirt, you know, good. You know, it's a nice color, you know.
Yeah, on stage we're attempting to present our strengths, and I think some of the best collaborations with other musicians happen when we focus more on what we can do together rather than what are the weaknesses. And like, you can downward spiral pretty quick when that is your focus.
Yeah,
I'm not. I think you have to be aware of them. And
absolutely,
you know.
But you know, isn't that the beautiful thing though? You know, the interplay between the stuff you can do, you know, and then just like how often and how much do we tiptoe into the place where we sort of have doubts, like how do we deal with, you know, like just, okay, we're gonna get a little vulnerable here, I hope y'all are okay with this, you know, it's probably gonna work, we think, but maybe not. You know, and certainly, you know, with music, that's such a, you know, so I mean, it's not like going to a stock car race and hoping people are gonna like crash and kill themselves, right? Nobody gets killed, you know, at a music, you know, concert, you know, nobody gets really hurt or anything unless somebody drops a beer on their foot or something. But that's not our problem. I mean, we're not doing, I mean, no, we never drink on stage, right? But so that's, you know,
So in that context, how would you define a mistake then? What is a mistake? Are they real?
Yeah. Well, a mistake happens when you're not listening to what's going on around you and you kind of go off and you start doing some, you know, like if you were talking, I just started talking about some crazy crap that, you know, like I was just, you know, oh, look at that. Oh, something's going on over there. Wow. Or, you know, oh, I'm feeling, my stomach's rumbling. Wow. You know. That's a, you know, in the context of music, I believe that's, you know, if you're not listening to each other, what are you doing playing music?
If you're not listening to each other,
I wish,
what are you doing?
All you all out there in radio land or podcast land could see could see Andy's face in color right now. It's one of the greatest shrug fests ever. You know?
Well, I was just thinking that's a good that I mean, I'm always looking for the title of the podcast, and so you caught me in a moment of both thinking, is this a great title? And can that weird rumbling outside please stand down?
That rumble.
I don't know what they're building out there, but we're trying to build musical bridges and have just try to exist. And these people are,
they're
very busy.
Yeah.
It's
a very busy world out there. Progress out there.
But again, like, I am trying to 100,000% listen and focus. What if you're not listening? What are you doing? Podcasting. But the funny thing about all the listening is that in life is that there's so much stimulus happening at a given moment that I think one of the biggest struggles that people have, including me, is how to focus in a given moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you had enough coffee or you didn't have enough coffee, or you had enough food or you didn't have enough food, like, we're always kind of moving in and out of these like situations where we're trying to fix problems for ourselves so that we can feel like a person again. And so I guess one of my big struggles with playing music and questions that I think a lot of people have but don't know really how to talk about is like, how do you get yourself in the right musical mindset so that you can focus on that listening?
Yeah.
And is there anything proactively we can do, or is it sort of a practice? How do you think about it?
Well, it is practice. You know, it's like I learned a lot. I lived with a writer for many years, and that thing about being a writer, you get up and you go in the room and you sit at the desk and you start pounding out words.
Yeah.
You know, you just write words, and some of it's going to work, and you know, maybe not hardly any of it, but it's you're going to produce. You're just going to. You have to be there. You have to be there to do it. You have to pick the instrument up. You have to put the bow on the string and move your finger, wiggle your fingers around, and hopefully, you know, you've got, you know, at the beginning, be gentle with yourself. You know, play a long note. Play, you know, find. You got to reinstall those frets every day, as Gabe Witcher famously said to me. You know, you have to find them every day, right? And that is absolutely true. So there's that, you know, and that can be a meditation, right? Because that doesn't. We're not trying to beat anybody. We're just trying to find it. Where is it? And just appreciate the sound of the instrument. For what it is, right? And that's a beautiful thing. That can really, you know, that kind of centering, it's like any other meditation, right? Like observing the breath. The longbows are like, as you're observing your breath, the infinite variation of balance between the frog and the tip. This is like almost 3 feet of just infinite variation of keeping the balance of the bow. It's always changing from the tip to the frog. And that, man, if that isn't interesting, you know, I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny how the simple things in music are absolutely worth focusing on. Mm-hmm. And I've met, like, you know, bass players who are learning about bluegrass they're at a camp, and it's not even like, and they're like learning about bluegrass, and they're playing too much, so the teacher says, oh, don't play so much. Just play that one note and then get that rest in there.
Yeah.
Where can that rest be louder than the note?
Very nice. Yeah, where are you ending that note? You thinking about that? Where does that note end? Yeah.
And this is what's so great about old-time music, right? Because on one hand, it is kind of simple. But on the other hand, the collective groove that's happening, and the thing that everyone's chasing is the feeling of your rhythms being so connected that you lose sense of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. The synchronization is off the charts the whole time. You know, after about the 35th or 45th repeat of the tune, things starting to get really magical, and that is a beautiful thing. And how much we do that at all, you know, with anything else, really, you know. I mean, most of what's going on in this culture is sort of designed to keep people from connecting in that way, you know. And just kind of very physical, kind of visceral, kind of rhythmic connection of the body. You know, it's the body. We have these bodies. We have to use our bodies to play our instruments. You know? So we might as well use, you know, all of them, right? You know, I have a thing with, I just suggest to people that they just, you know, if you don't want to stomp, you know, or, you know, people, you know, getting on this instrument, you're concentrating so hard. Sometimes you're that can be good, but it can also be kind of the concentration comes down to like a point, and the whole rest of your body kind of starts tensing up, and then you freeze, and then you get all this stuff. And it tightens up. But if you're moving, you know, try, for instance, just rotating your spine on your hips, like side to side. It doesn't have to even be more than a couple of inches, right? Just barely moving. Just something that wouldn't even be noticeable to the casual observer, right? Just that kind of just left to right, slight rotation. Even that can, you know, as long as you keep your back kind of moving, you know, that dynamic equilibrium thing, you're going to stay much more relaxed and things are going to be easier, you know? And so those kind of things, those like very concrete kind of things. My partner Sharon and I were in an airport just recently in Germany, waiting to come back home from somewhere, Italy, actually. And the mom was there with her couple of her kids, and she had this little, you know, it was like maybe a four-year-old boy. And, you know, we were just sitting there waiting. It's just the worst possible situation for a little kid, you know. And she just says, "All right, honey, just put your right hand over your stomach. Just hold your hand over your stomach and breathe. Three times, take three deep breaths." And man, if I had a mom like that, I would probably be a lot calmer right today. But, you know, those kind of very concrete things where you're really dealing with your body in a absolutely, you know, just the way the body needs to be dealt with, right? Because it's a body.
You mean the body and the mind are related?
Oh, they're in, come on.
a lot of this stuff seems obvious on paper, mm-hmm. but talking about it and putting it into practice are two completely different things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Discipline. Yeah. How do we get to focus when everything in this culture is designed to, you know, make us lose our focus and get caught up in some.
How many notifications you have. You're missing out right now.
Yeah, I'm missing out. I could be buying something right now.
I could be buying
four different things.
Speaking of things you could be buying, how about that new Mr. Sun? By the time this is released, I think this is now possible to buy. So we're doing CDs, we're doing digital.
Oh, yeah, we're doing digital downloads. It's on Bandcamp.
Vinyl?
You can order vinyl.
You can get vinyl.
For those of you who really want a physical experience.
That's right. Yeah, add some extra popples and
experience.
Pops and crisps.
Experience. Yeah, I speak as a 70-year-old who did, you know, had a 30-year episode with vinyl, and I'm over it. But I know that people love physical experience of dealing with vinyl, and it is a beautiful thing. For first four plays, and then, you know, got him to get another piece of vinyl.
Well, can we play him a track from it?
Oh, man, could we? Yeah, we sure could. So this is Mr. Sun plays Duke Ellington's Nutcracker Suite, and we'll play a little thing here. ¶¶
Thank you.
want to thank you so much for saying words, for being vulnerable, for sharing your musings with us and on the River of Suck swim team. If we want to follow you on the internet or in real life, how do we find out what's going on?
You can find out by going to my website. I have a website. It's darylanger.com, coincidentally enough, but it is spelled a funny way, D-A-R-O-L, and then anger, A-N-G-E-R. So, yeah, even though I'm not angry most of the time, that's how it's spelled. So you can find it that way, and, you know, there's all, I got the Facebook and all that stuff, you know, so... Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. Go to my Bandcamp site. That's kind of fun. Bandcamp / Daryl Anger.
I just pulled that up here. I mean, you can get so many of your records through the years. Mr. Sun, Yanda, Psychograss, your drones in all keys.
Yeah.
For your practice time.
My monster
duo
hit.
With Mike Marshall. Music with Emmy Phelps. If you want to listen to Daryl's music, it couldn't be easier or more fun to just go to Daryl Anger 1. There's a number 1 in there.
Oh, yeah.
Is there not?
There is.
DarylAnger1.bandcamp.com. It's even got a picture of you playing the fiddle. Look at that.
Weird, huh? I know.
Crazy.
Yeah, coincidence. Again. So, yeah, that's been a nice thing, you know, because I can put up stuff, you know, just stuff that, I mean, if somebody hands me a cassette of something I did in 1985 with Tony Rice and Mike Marshall, I can just say, oh, yeah, I guess I will appropriate this and put it on Bandcamp, you know, turn it into zeros and ones.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's fun. And really, you know, just sharing the stuff is a beautiful thing. I feel super lucky, you know. We're definitely one of those people that was in the right place at the right time. Because, you know, really, as far as just, you know, how good I was at that point or how good a musician or anything, you know, just about anybody could have done the job, but I just happened to be there and I was into it and I threw myself into it with everything I had, you know, so that was, combination of luck and just not knowing what else to do, really, seemed to work. And then not leaving, you know, I'm not going away just yet.
Oh, nice. Nobody said crossing the River of Suck would be easy or that you had to do it alone. So I want to thank you for tuning in and giving it a chance. You can join the River of Suck swim team and support this podcast for as little as $1 a month at riverofsuckswimteam.com. Yeah, it goes to a Patreon website. That's my Patreon, Andy Reiner. That's me. I'm your podcast host. Yup, you can support me. And these interviews, this is important. These are important conversations. I feel honored to have them, and I feel even more honored that you would listen to it. So thanks for your support.
Cool.
We'll be back soon. Till next time,
keep swimming!